now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
This is a podcast from The Times, sports newspaper of the year.
Hello and welcome to The Game. I'm Gabriel Marcotti and I'm here with 40 minutes of total football fact and also some opinion as well. My dream team this week is Tony Cascarino, Matt Hughes, and of course, Rory Smith. Now, you will note that Rory sounds far away, and that's because he's out and about. He's at the Paralympics. Is that right, Rory?
I am indeed. I'm coming at you live, or not live, from the Paralympic Park, we should probably call it now. It's very sunny.
There you go. A bit of wheelchair hoops later, right?
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to it.
All righty. It is actually one of the better spectator sports in the Paralympics, in my humble opinion. Later on, we'll be discussing the transfer window and who's done their job well this summer. But first, Liverpool and Arsenal, that's where we start. And I'm going to start with you, Hughesy, because I want to start with Brendan Rodgers' comments afterwards, not about the game, but the ones where he says, and you need to help me out with this, because he says, well, had I known that we weren't going to get another striker, I wouldn't have let Andy Carroll go. And I was very confident that we were going to get another striker. Now, I just want to understand this. Brendan Rodgers is the manager. He doesn't have a director of football. When he signed, it was part of the negotiation that, you know, he would be ultimately responsible. I think he only answers to the chief executive and the owners. So basically, when he says that, he's basically saying that he screwed up, yes?
I don't think he's saying he screwed up. I think he's saying that the owners and this chief executive wouldn't give him the money he wanted to sign the player he wanted, which, as we all know, is Clint Dempsey.
So why did he let Carroll go? Well, he couldn't figure out that they said, oh, here's the money. Dempsey's done. Oh, no, look, he's not done. Oh, and you let Carroll go. Oh, shame.
Well, he gambled that he could persuade them and win the battle of wills, and quite clearly he couldn't. So from his point of view, it's a miscalculation. But I think in Liverpool, the heat will not be on Rodgers, it will be on the owners, which explains this very hastily constructed and posted open letter to the fans this morning from John W. Henry, which is a bit of a sign of an early panic in my view.
Rory?
Yeah, I agree with Hughesy, as always. I think it came down to a calculated gamble from Rodgers. He felt that letting Carroll go would force FSG to sort of open the purse strings a little bit, and they didn't ultimately. They did put a bid in for Clint Dempsey. We don't know how much for, but estimates suggest it wasn't around the 6 or 7 million that both Spurs and Villa made firm offers for, and FSG wouldn't go higher. So what happened is that Rodgers, I think, has to take some responsibility, because Rodgers played the Carroll situation dreadfully from the start, but there's no question that he's not being supported in the market by his owners. They've condemned him to go through 4 months of the season with two fit strikers, one of whom needs about five chances to score a goal, and the other of whom looked relatively raw. I'm sure Barini's a good player, but he's not sort of a proven goal scorer. So yeah, I'd say, as Hughesy did, that the ultimate responsibility kind of rests with FSG, but Rodgers did play the Carroll situation very poorly.
Right, am I right in thinking, and I'll come to you in a second, Cass, that when Rodgers was appointed, he didn't want a director of football, and that, as Tony Barrett told us originally, FSG were wedded to the idea of having a guy who coached the team and having a director of football who'd be a specialist dealing with transfers. And then when Rodgers came in, it was part of the conditions that he'd be the big boss and he'd know what to do, even though the guy is 39 years old and has had one season in the Premier League. So, I mean, is it fair to dump everything on the owners? Because, I mean, directors of football, other managers work with budgets and restrictions as well, right?
Yeah, well, I think the key point here is that FSG, there's no question, had a plan in mind when they got rid of Kenny Dalglish and Damian Comolli. They wanted a sort of, I guess you could call it like a management board. They wanted three people, I think, one of whom would be the manager. Oh, sorry, four, including the manager. So you've got the manager doing the coaching stuff. You've got a director of recruitment, sort of a glorified chief scout. You've got someone sort of in the chief executive managing director role. And then you had a space, I think, for someone who would oversee the implementation of a philosophy at the club. And as far as I know, that was meant to be Pep Segura, who's now left Liverpool. What happens when Rodgers gives his 180-page dossier to FSG is they're so impressed that they think, right, this is the guy we want, and he won't work with the director of football, so we can't have that management structure in place. And FSG is complete about turn from what they wanted, and to me that's worrying, because it sounds like they're kind of making up their policy on the hoof.
Cass?
I'm confused. This is something like the Batman, the Riddler, because I'm hearing some strange things from all different parties. I read Sam Allardyce this morning talking about that every manager, the reason why Carroll is there, because Brendan Rodgers goes a different direction. Now, Brendan Rodgers has said all summer, really, that Carroll didn't have a place at Anfield. They spent £35 million on him, and how can you have a £35 million player on the bench?
That's a very intelligent thing to do when you're trying to sell something, to go and say, like, oh, I don't need this anymore. Look, it's worth this to
No,
me.
No, no, no.
Hey, Cass, how much you want to buy this for?
Gab, because you say things like that, it doesn't make people go, oh, I'll go and spend it, because Brendan Rodgers or any other manager touts his player up.
When you talk down your asset,
it
hurts the value of your
Well,
that's what I'm saying.
People are not that daft, are they? Are they really that naive? If they've talked to Andy Carroll down even more, would you think Sam Allardyce would think, oh, he's right, I'm not going to go after him?
No. I'm telling the opposite. I'm saying, Sam Allardyce makes up his mind about whether he needs Carroll or not. He says, oh, wow,
absolutely,
I can get him at a better price because I see value in him that Brendan Rodgers, who wants to play football in a different way, perhaps, doesn't.
But
that's
Gab, if you don't fancy a player, you don't think he's part of your plan, he's not good enough for what you want, why, even if you didn't bring a striker, why are you keeping him? You don't fancy him. Do you think you'll get a lot out of Andy Carroll if he actually knows, which he would have done, that the manager don't fancy him?
Because now, the skill is selling players well, because it's not your money, it's
but to say
the
yesterday,
money.
But to say yesterday that, you know, I wouldn't have sold if I didn't know I couldn't bring anybody in, or I wouldn't have prepared to let Andy go. You didn't fancy him. You didn't rate him. And it was blatantly obvious from day one you didn't. The first moment he walked into Liverpool Football Club, he talked about Carroll, and it was all in the papers straight away that Carroll had no future at Liverpool under Brendan Rodgers. So to me, I was very, very confused. And to say again last week, he's a £35 million player and, you know, can't have that sort of player on a bench. There's been many expensive buys over the last few years. The big top four clubs have had players of maybe not as much, but very close to that value on the benches. That happens at big football clubs. And the trouble is, Liverpool are not that at the moment.
I know a team that won the Champions League last year with a £50 million striker on the bench, but that's a whole other issue. Let's get onto the game. Matt, if you're one of those Trustin Arsene guys, you could point out that Arsenal are undefeated this season and they haven't yet conceded a goal. And that's despite all the doom and gloom about Van Persie and Song leaving. Are you on message with that?
To an extent. I trust Arsene Wenger to motivate the players he's got and to produce good football teams and to win games in August. I think the problem is, as it's been for 5 years, that his squad isn't big enough. I think on a day they can beat anyone, but they'll have bad days, and when Diaby is injured and when Podolski is injured, there'll be no one who can come in and play the goals and score a goal. So I don't think one win makes their season, and I still think if they finish fourth they'll have done very well, which might be good enough for Ivan Gazidis on the board, but probably won't be good enough for the fans. And round it goes again.
Hughesy, you just said when Diaby is injured and when Podolski is injured, not if Diaby and Podolski are injured. Are you deliberately trying to jinx the Gunners?
Well, of course not, but you look at Diaby's stats, it's amusing. I was watching Match of the Day 2 this morning, and they were talking about Diaby as if he was a new player who just signed for Arsenal, and who was compared to Patrick Vieira. This is a guy who's been at Arsenal.
No. Don't tell me that. Please don't.
7 years.
Hughesy, who compared him to... This makes me so angry. So angry. Who compared him to Patrick Vieira?
I think it was Colin Murray, which he's not in... It probably says everything.
I mean...
He's got long legs, Gab.
He's got long legs. He plays in midfield and he's black, right? So he's just like Patrick Vieira. Oh, and he speaks French. But he can't say. Gabby should be, if you're going to compare him to somebody, you compare him to like a wimpier version of Fellaini, perhaps, or Dembele, right?
Well, look, people love to be the first to announce that there's this new guy, or I know he's been there for a few years, but he's now like a new signing because he comes in and he played well yesterday. Patrick Vieira, miles away from that. I mean,
Patrick Vieira is a midfielder.
He's a player that certainly adds a lot of drive to the midfield, and he's powerful, and he's decent on the ball. I mean, I've seen him playing a lot of different positions.
You think he's only decent on the ball?
I think he's not bad. He's no technical genius. That's without a doubt, but he's not bad. But the way that Arsenal play, and you know the movement that's around in any Arsene Wenger team, I thought he'd done okay. I mean, comparing him to Patrick Vieira is totally unfair, and like you said, a pretty poor comparison.
They play different positions. I mean,
but Diaby's played a few positions, Gab. But he's
yeah, I know,
Arsenal.
But
he's been all over the place.
He's an attacking midfielder. I mean, there's no. I don't like labeling people because it's, you know, dudes on the pitch with the ball. But as my producer Chris Skinner just handed me a note, you know, last season Frimpong was the new Vieira, and I think that's a much more appropriate comparison.
About him.
Rory, we've praised Cazorla of the new signings to high heaven, of course. Podolski put in a goal, looked sort of that good combination of power and quickness. Giroud missed a goal and was yelled at by Gibbs. Now, if I were Giroud, I would go and turn Gibbs into a little puddle of oil for yelling at me like that and say, like, sorry, who the hell are you? I am the center forward. It's my job to shoot from there. And I happen to have missed. Wait, so were you, speaking of Giroud, will you back me up on that? From that position, you don't care if you've got some little wussy left back shouting at you.
Selfish.
It's your center forward. Yeah, yeah. It's your job to score, right?
Well, yeah, and lots of the best goal scorers will ignore their colleagues.
And you shouldn't get yelled at for a guy. And he wasn't even in a better position.
No,
he was all the way to the left.
Picks on the new signing. It does happen at football clubs.
It was a bad day for Pepe Reina. And the only reason I say this is because the United manager dropped his Spanish goalkeeper. But should Brendan Rodgers or the club be thinking in terms of post-Reina right now? Or is it just ludicrous even to suggest that?
Well, goalkeepers make mistakes. He's made two in a week, so he's obviously going to be concerned. But I think Liverpool have got far bigger problems than that, as we discussed earlier. Reina's 34, but Brad Friedel was 41 and was making great saves at the weekend for Tottenham. So I don't think he's over the hill just yet.
Rory, Cass, either one of you Liverpool fans want to argue the dropping of Reina?
No, I think the problem Liverpool have got, there's two things at play with Reina. Hughie's right, you shouldn't make sort of immediate reactions. One mistake, I mean, it was very unlucky, the goal yesterday. It's the sort of thing that just happens occasionally. The problem with Reina is that that's actually his third mistake in a week. I think, in fact, there was another one that didn't get punished yesterday. And it's after a season and a half, maybe two seasons, where he's not been... There was a time when I think Pepe Reina was the best goalkeeper in England. He really isn't anymore. He's not even top five or six. And that is partially because they don't have a proper goalkeeping coach. Pepe's been on at Liverpool for at least a year to get Xavi Valero, the goalkeeping coach he had under Benitez, back. Or Jose Manuel Otorena, who was the previous goalkeeping coach he brought into the club. And the other thing is that it shows that the worth of a decent backup goalkeeper, because Reina knows he's not getting dropped. Brad Jones isn't of sufficient quality. I'm not actually even sure where Alex Doney is. I don't know if he's still in Brazil, but he certainly didn't do a lot of pre-season with Liverpool. So Reina knows he's untouchable, and that doesn't keep you at the very top of your game, which is where a top-class goalkeeper has to be all the time. So I think there's obviously the transfer window shut. Liverpool could do a lot by bringing in at least a good quality goalkeeping coach in the next couple of weeks to really get Reina back.
No, but surely, Roy, that's an issue for the director of football, right? oh, but they don't have one. Sorry.
You should always, every club, you like, you have positions, and whether you're centre forward, centre half, goalkeeper like Reina, you want pressure on your number one, because pressure does create, you know, fighting for that shirt on a Saturday afternoon. I always think you get a better level of performance from every position on the park. And Pepe Reina looks like an average goalkeeper, which he is certainly not. He's far better than that. But he's making pretty basic mistakes. We've seen so many individual errors from keepers already this season. You know, bog standard, things straight at them that they're not even keeping hold of. And I would have absolutely had my hat on Pepe Reina 2 years ago, saving the type of goals that he's conceding at the moment. That's a big concern, because it will affect his confidence and people start questioning you at will. But you need to be pressure. And I think, like what Rory touched on and Matt, you've got to have pressure from the second keeper, you know, a better number two to make you be even a stronger, and knowing you have to perform in week in, week out.
Let's head over to the St. Mary's, but let's keep talking Spanish goalkeepers. Hughesy, I thought it was pretty remarkable once to hear Sir Alex Ferguson come in and say, oh yeah, De Gea has been dropped because you know, he made a mistake in the last game. I thought it was unusual, because you rarely hear a manager criticize his own players. And you certainly rarely hear Sir Alex do that. Is it just down to the psychology in this case? He thinks De Gea will be motivated and react to that. It's not like he's dumping De Gea, right?
No, he's not. No, he's certainly not dumping him on the 1st of September. Not even Fergie can do that. It's interesting. One thing you must bear in mind, that he won't have said that. He wouldn't have let that slip accidentally. Everything Ferguson says is just calculating and has a reason. I can only assume he's concluded that De Gea is a guy who's more motivated by a stick than a carrot, and he thinks that dropping him, making that public, will motivate him and improve his performances, because there's no doubt he's very, very talented. He just makes mistakes, as young goalkeepers often do. So I don't expect his Old Trafford career to be over. I expect him to go away, work hard, and come back and get the shirt back. Lindegaard is a decent keeper, but he doesn't, to me, look like a number one.
Cass, was that the thing that, you know, you need stake or carrot? I mean, did one motivate Cascarino by giving him a carrot, or by beating him over the head with a stick?
Beating. I liked a good beating, and I reacted.
I thought that might have been it, yeah.
Look, managers handle, and Fergie's handled many different players in many different ways, and he's normally got the best out of them, and he looks at individuals, he trains with them on a regular basis, you look at characters, and you look at what you think will get the best out of them. I thought the alarming thing was, you know, okay, De Gea got dropped. The alarming thing was that Man United, as a midfield, had nobody who could actually make a tackle or get near, and they were alarmingly close to losing the game.
I feel like we had this conversation last week.
Yeah, well honestly, it was when I'm watching it, I'm thinking the only way this game can go the other way is if Southampton do what they did, and did what so many, many teams have done against United over the years, end up conceding and dropping deep and getting their forwards off and just trying to hang on, and that somehow masked the other things. There were lots of things that were strange about that game game yesterday, on a United perspective, more than in some ways the Liverpool Arsenal game.
Yeah, Rory, I want to get your take on this, because I feel like sort of Evra and Raphael got a lot of the stick for Southampton getting back into it, but the midfield was pretty. I think Cleverley gave the ball away for the first goal, but they weren't.
There wasn't a midfield.
Yeah. There really wasn't much of one, was there?
Well, that's the great question about, and I'm sure we'll touch on it, the great question about United in the transfer window is Ferguson's apparent sort of pathological desire not to sign a midfielder, which is, I mean, I just can't explain it. You know, you look at United and you think, well, what they need on certain occasions, not at Old Trafford, against the lesser lights of the Premier League, they don't need the defensive midfielder then, that's absolutely right. But in games like yesterday's, where you've got a team who are sort of really up for it and roaring forward for sort of first hour or so, you need a holding player in there. That's fairly basic stuff, surely, and I think that's an obvious shortage for Manchester United, and I don't think anybody really knows why Ferguson doesn't seem to be bothered by it.
Usually, from all this negativity, let's talk positives. Now, Robin van Persie takes the worst penalty in the history of humanity, just about. But then he scores a hat trick, and I don't know. I kind of got the impression, looking at this game, that if Van Persie doesn't sign for United in the summer, United do not come back and win this match. And as I was trying to sort of figure out why did they sign Van Persie, I'm sort of coming to the conclusion that because maybe they know that there's games like when Rooney's not there, when they're going to struggle in midfield, struggle at the back, and they need the added value guy who can do that because it's not going to come from other areas of the pitch, perhaps. Am I getting a little bit too excited about RVP and his hat trick here?
I don't think so. I was there yesterday. It was a brilliant game to watch, but United were desperately poor for 89% of the game, ended up winning, and that's down to one man. I can't think of any other player in the Premier League who would have scored the goals Van Persie did yesterday. I think he had, if you include the penalty, he had 5 chances. He scored 3 goals and missed a penalty. That's how clinical he can be. And there were signs that when United get it right, particularly at home against poor teams, he's going to score a hat for Valencia. Play a great cross for him for the first goal. I think that's going to be a really productive partnership for them. And the issue for Fergie is who is going to play around Van Persie. Because when he's in the form of his life, he has been for the last 18 months, he has to play. But he either got so many attacking options, I don't think that Ferguson knows where to use them. And it's going to be fascinating to see if and where Wayne Rooney comes back into the team. I had one theory yesterday that Fergie was maybe going to play him in midfield because he can't get in the team up front, and he's got so few options in midfield, so that'll be one to watch.
Roy, I need to come to you on Gaston Ramirez for obvious reasons. If Southampton keep playing like this, he's going to fit in really, really nicely because you've got the clinical, intelligent, wily finisher, Lambert, or Lambert, as some of us like to call him. And you've got the genius of Gaston coming in and meshing with Lallana, and they're going to stay up, aren't they?
Well, they've had each kind of a false position there, isn't it? They've played both Manchester clubs, and the defeat to Wigan, I think, was very disappointing. But, yeah, I mean, Southampton, they're certainly not going to just sort of wilt in the Premier League and go straight back down. That's not what... They've got better players than that. Lallana, I think, fantastic. Stephen Davis, I said to you the other day, is an incredibly intelligent signing, really experienced, stunned that no one took him from Rangers quicker than that. Ramirez will fit into that style, I think, because presumably on sort of wide right of the front three with Lambert and Lallana up front, that they play the sort of football that can get the most out of a player like that. The issue would always be whether how quickly Ramirez gets used to the tempo at which English football is played, because Italian football, as you know, Dab, has played at a slower tempo. I think that's probably fair to say. And although Uruguay is the finest footballing nation on the face of the earth,
after
they too. They too have a slightly slower sort of style. So there'll be a sort of a period of adaptation for Ramirez. It's a great sign.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
You know, if it comes off, it's a really ambitious signing. It's a real statement of intent from Southampton. And yeah, they look good enough. Certainly, I don't think they'll have an easy season. I think they'll ship a lot of goals, but they have enough about them attacking going forward to have a chance of staying up.
Hughes, you were actually at the St. Mary's, so would like you to weigh in on Southampton as well. Do you agree with your fellow Yorkshireman that because of the Italian chief executive, they will definitely stay up?
Not sure that's quite what he said, but hey, they're going to be fun to watch, aren't they? Three games so far, I think it's 12 goals in total, so yeah, they do have good options as well going forward. Particularly, it's just a case of how many goals they're going to concede. I was a bit worried by the goalkeeper actually yesterday, Kelvin Davies. I know he saved the penalty and he's a club stalwart who was there in League One, but his kicking and distribution was appalling, and he was responsible for gifting United many of the few chances they did have. So they're going to have to tighten that up if they're going to stay up.
Conceded eight goals in three games is a big, you know, big problem. You're going to have to score three to win if they continue. And yeah, they've played the two Man United clubs, but they've played Wigan at home, which you'd expect, you know, any chance they're going to have to get something from that type of game.
Right, so the transfer window is now shut, and for the time being, till January. If you want to hear our thoughts on this, feel free to download last week's podcast. But want to take a look at what has some of the clubs have operated in the summer and who we think has actually done a good job. And two clubs that come to mind, Cass, because you mentioned them just before we came on, were West Ham and QPR. Now, two clubs who, had they not spent a considerable amount of money, would likely be fighting to avoid relegation. Yeah. QPR spent £19 million getting a whole grab bag of superstars, real or presumed, including Granero from Real Madrid, Park Ji-sung from United, Julio Cesar from Inter Milan, Stefan Mbia from Marseille. They made Yakita's deal permanent. I'm sure it was personal before that. Robert Greene, which is kind of funny because then they got the other goalkeeper.
Which was even funnier, Gab, that he was on a free transfer and they only signed him for 2 years, so they obviously didn't fancy him as much as, you know, go and get another keeper, because a 2-year contract for a goalkeeper on a free who's an England keeper was a very, very short-term contract.
Yeah. Andy Johnson.
Yeah.
And Basingwa. £19 million. Is that the price of staying up? Are you impressed with all that?
Well, they hugely put a lot of efforts into staying up last year when and they went for people like Cisse, who was on the bench on Saturday. They've gone for positions all over the park. You know, Bosingwa, fullback, two new goalkeepers. Andy Johnson, who obviously Mark Hughes had worked with at Fulham. NBA, Marseille, a different, you know, a player who they wanted, a more of a holding sort of sitter and a playmaker that we sort of expect all clubs to have in the Premiership. They've had a tough opening games. They've played some tough matches already. You know, Man City away is a real big ask.
Yeah, it's just to assess what they've done rather than what they've played.
I
think these guys are generally, it's a grab. It's like a ass backwards grab bass of turds, with the exception. I mean, Stefan Mbia's come from 7 years. Park Ji-sung is done. Ryan Nelson's 35 years old. Robert Greene stinks. Julio Cesar, yeah. You know, Andy Johnson. Anybody seen him last year? Am I harsh here?
No, I think you've totally exaggerated. No,
£90 million.
They're not all done, Gab. That's absolute nonsense. Some of them, you go and get transfers, and you're never guaranteed any return. Sometimes
you never guaranteed. But spending £9 million on Granero.
We had this conversation a few weeks ago. £19 million is not a lot of money. For a club, it's not. Whether you think it is or not, that doesn't even buy a Van Persie. Yeah. For clubs to stay up, they need five or six.
It doesn't even buy a Van Persie. How many clubs buy a Van Persie?
No.
Can you help me here, Rory, please?
I think you're exaggerating slightly, Gab, which isn't something I normally associate with you. I do agree.
Whole load of turd, his actual words.
It's pushing it a bit, isn't it, Cass? No, I do admit the thing that worries me with QPR is sort of twofold. One is I don't think there's any plan. There seems to have been two stages to the transfer window. The first bit where they went and got Johnson and Nelson and Green on frees, which seemed quite sensible. And then the second bit where they suddenly decided they wanted to sign loads of players who all have one thing in common, such as Julio Cesar. They were going to get Granero, who's a brilliant player, Granero, although, again, usual problems with adapting to English football. Yeah, so and the issue that then leads to is that they have this massively bloated squad. And who is paying the wages? How are they paying the wages? They get 18,000 at Loftus Road. Tony Fernandez has money, I think, but I don't know whether he's got enough to supplement all of those wages, because you've got to imagine that Julio Cesar and De Niro are going to be on substantial amounts of cash. So I think there is a... to me, not all the players are turds, as you say. I think Granero and Beer,
all the players were turds. I said for the amount of money that's being spent on them and the amount of money that's being spent on wages, you just wonder where the plan is. Granero was a great player 3-4 years ago, but you know, he basically carried Mourinho's clipboard the last couple of years.
I think the issue, Granero to me is the one, Granero and Beer, I think are fine. I don't think you get many people arguing with those, but it's the lack of plan. Did they really need to sign Ryan Nelson, who's presumably on relatively big money? Did they really need to get two goalkeepers? I don't think they did. So it's the money that's been spent on wages, how they support that, and what Mark Hughes' policy in terms of signing was. Did he have a list of players to fit certain positions that he needed? Bissouma, did they need Bissouma? Is Nedim Manua not a good enough right back for a team who wants to finish 10th in the Premier League? Is it really worth paying Bissouma what, 70 or 80 grand a week, which is what it'll be on?
I want to ask you about it, because that's especially bizarre, because I like to be all conspiratorial, but Nedim Manua and Mark Hughes have the same agent, correct?
Correct.
Oh, sorry, the same advisor, because he doesn't like it when you call him an agent. So,
no, he doesn't, and he's an advisor to quite a lot of the people at QPR at the moment.
That's what I mean. So how do you explain the Bissouma deal? Is it just like, oh, look, this guy's got a good pedigree and he lives in West London, so it'll be very convenient for him to come on board and train
with us? Well, you think they chose Bissouma was because of his commute? They thought, he's nearby. He can get here in half an hour. That's definitely... Now, Bissouma was a great fullback. He is now entirely finished. He's not good enough to play in the Premier League. There's no shadow. Hughesy watches Chelsea even more than me. Quite a lot more than me. And I'm sure he'd agree. But yeah, the Bissouma thing is bizarre. I think it's important that we say that this isn't something that's unique to our friend Peter Abshin. There's a lot of clubs where certain agents have a lot more success with their players than other agents, and that is one of the huge flaws in the way that football scouting works.
All right, well, let's move on to another club where I'm sure that Hughesy will tell me that is definitely not the case, and that, of course, is West Ham. Another huge spender relative to, in terms of net spend for the Premier League, about 17.5 million. Some of the highlights, of course, Matt Jarvis, nearly 11 million. Modibo Maiga from Sochaux, who I don't know, I think there's a lot of questions about him. Alou Diarra, veteran from Marseille, but of course James Collins, the big bald center half from the back, who of course was at West Ham before they sold him, but that's not down to Sam. And Andy Carroll, of course, the big man up front, who started out with a bit of a splash. It's almost too easy to talk about Allardyce, direct football, blah blah blah. Certainly, they've got the big man, and if they hadn't got Carroll, they would have had Carlton Cole, another big man. Great that Jarvis puts a good ball in, although maybe not the quickest player.
You're not serious.
What?
You just said Matt Jarvis. He's like lightning.
I'm intrigued by this. Matt Jarvis is a lightning winger, in addition to being very technically
quick. Well, he might not be the quickest winger in the league, but he's certainly quick. That's my point.
All right. If you say so.
Gab, I've got to say I agree with Cass on that one.
All right. I'm wrong. I don't think... I thought he's kind of sluggish, actually. But hey, what gives? The verdict on West Ham?
Well, I think the difference between QPR and West Ham is it looks like West Ham have got a plan, and it's Sam's plan. He signed players that fit into the way he likes to play. Most of them are experienced. They've got experience in the Premier League as well, crucially, which a lot of QPR signings haven't. And they're powerful, physical players who can all play. And on Saturday, they looked good and were well worth a 3-0 win. I think the goals were quite direct, but it was a bit unfair of Martin Yole to talk about their direct football afterwards, because West Ham did actually play some nice stuff, and I think they'll be all right.
Let's move to West Brom so that Rory and I can sort of bond over Claudio Jakob, because I actually think they've sort of addressed their needs. They've only £1 million. They got a lot of guys out, but Ben Foster, I think, helps. And Marcus Rosenberg's been terrible for the last 3 years, but he maybe is worth taking a punt given he's a free transfer, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think Rosenberg, his development stalled, didn't it, really? He did look a hell of a player early in his career, but then he was at Werder Bremen, he didn't play regularly. I don't know if he fitted into the way Thomas Schaaf played particularly. He may have more luck in England, but yeah, I think the problem with West Brom is going to be goals. There's a lot of pressure on them, Windier, I think. Although, I will say, Shane Long's finish against Everton was superb. It was a wonderful goal to watch, a lovely sort of team goal. But Jakob, who's a player that I first saw completely by chance for Racing in Argentina in the flesh, when he was, I then saw him at one of the under-17, under-19 World Cups where he really impressed, and then he just sort of disappeared off the radar. I think he was captain of Racing, but he never seemed to get linked to move to Europe. No one seemed to be looking at him. West Brom have taken a chance, and it is a chance taking a player straight out of Argentina, but he must be about 4'10", Claudio Jakob, and he competed against Everton with Fellaini as if he was about 6 foot tall, and I think that bodes really well. He's a strapper. He looks a bit like a sort of budget Mascherano, with maybe a little bit more going forward. Yeah, I think he's excellent. And with Malumbu, who is one of the most underrated players in the Premier League, next to him, that's a really good central midfield. They've had a great start, West Brom. I think they'll obviously fade. I do worry if they've got enough goals in their side, but no, they've done well this window, I've got to admit.
Some of us, of course, were bigging up Malumbu on this very podcast 2 years ago, but that was before Rory joined. Stephen Fletcher, Adam Johnson, Louis Saha, that's a shopping list for your buddy Martin O'Neill. Again, net spend in that 15 to 20 million range, and that's also because they only got the Asamoah Gyan money now. Otherwise, obviously, it would have been more. You impressed with this and the amounts paid?
Well, again, it goes to a bit like what we talked about with Sam Allardyce, the direction Martin O'Neill, he wanted a wide guy, he feels that can deliver in Adam Johnson, and then Fletcher, someone who can finish. So it's very typical to what, with Matt Jarvis and Andy Carroll going to West Ham, that's what Martin O'Neill decides he needs. And I expect them to get more goals via them options, because they are players. You know, Fletcher, you know, he's a bit of an all-rounder. He's not bad on the ground. He's not exceptional. He's not quick, not bad, you know, decent in the air, and he looks like a player that will, with Sessegnon alongside Sunderland, give them more impact going forward. So I do think that Johnson and certainly Fletcher will give Sunderland a lot more.
Yeah, I think in terms of assessing teams' transfer windows, that's the crucial thing, is whether they've bought to a plan. So it's hard to say that, say West Ham have had a better transfer window than Chelsea, because Chelsea have signed Eden Hazard and Oscar and whoever else. But the fact is that West Ham have bought to a plan. They've got an idea in their heads, and they're working towards that. So Sunderland, I think Swansea have done that. And that's what, as we say, what QPR really haven't done, is have any sort of approach that makes any sort of logical sense. And even United, who've obviously signed a wonderful player in Van Persie and another one in Tadawa, but they haven't addressed one of their key issues, and that's surely what the transfer window is for.
But Swansea, I think, have actually made money in the in the transfer window, and they picked up another guy who I really like. I'm not 100% sure he's going to settle, and that's Pablo Hernandez, the Valencia winger. But you know, I think they've done extremely extremely well. Shout out to Stoke, of course, picked up Charlie Adam, who, you know, again, seems obvious delivery on set pieces. And they also have that guy, Jeff Cameron, who I'm assuming is Rory Delap's love child, given the way he takes his he takes his throw-ins. Sorry we can give a shout-out to everybody, but hey. All right, time now for some quick hits. Total humiliation for Chelsea in the European Super Cup Friday night, as a hat-trick for Radamel Falcao put Atletico Madrid 3-0 up by halftime. Atletico would end up winning 4-1, but Matt, what did you make of Falcao, and why haven't Chelsea signed him? They certainly had enough chances.
It's an overused word, but Falcao is absolutely sensational. As Rory will testify, it's one of the few occasions I was actually excited about watching football. So that's how good he was. why Chelsea haven't signed him is a bit of a mystery, and I think it basically goes down to the fact that they spent 50 million quid on another striker 18 months ago and are desperate to have it work, and they couldn't afford two £50 million strikers at the same time. Abramovich thought about it in January and again in the summer, but figured that if he bought Falcao, we'd have to get rid of Torres, and he couldn't do that and didn't want to risk undermining the Spaniards' fragile confidence even more by signing a better player.
Falcao, Aguero, Torres, Forlan. Quite a, I don't want to say production line because they actually produce them, but funny how they've all been through Calderon Stadium in Madrid. Andy Carroll makes an instant splash for his new club, West Ham, who beat up Fulham 3-0. Cass, it's almost too easy to talk about big men and Route 1. But tell me, in terms of Andy Carroll himself, will a season at Upton Park make him a better player?
I think he'll benefit, yeah. Playing football week in, week out, and a guy that's going to, you know, make West Ham play in a fashion. Because one thing that he did, and he did brilliantly in the first half on Saturday, was he was a decoy. And that's part of a big man's job. Not only to be a springboard for the attack, but be a decoy for others around you to get into positions and score goals and create opportunities. And I tell you what, he ripped them apart with not always having to win the ball. So, I think he'll benefit enormously.
And it's not a concern that he's reunited with his old buddy and the temptations of Faces nightclub and all that stuff?
It could be a concern. We'll see. I'm sure Big Sam will be on top of it.
There you go. West Brom defeated Everton in the Derby of Scottish Managers and are now up to second alongside City and Swansea. Rory, care to give Steve Clark some love? Metaphorically, Rory.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not in a position to do it physically. I think when he was appointed, there was a lot of concern that Steve Clark, there's an element of myth about Steve Clark, that he was Mourinho's assistant with great success at Chelsea, but you look at everywhere else he's gone, he's had probably mixed success. But he seems to have got West Brom playing a slight hybrid on the way Hodgson had them playing. Some good signings, although there's a lot of credit there goes to Dan Ashworth, technical director, who they could yet lose to the Football Association. He's the favourite for the same role at the FA. And I think that would be a major loss for West Brom. But yeah, as it stands, great start to the season. I'm sure they'll be fine. Don't think they'll be relegated. And Steve Clark has to take a lot of credit.
Spurs grab a point against Norwich, but Andre Villas-Boas gets booed at the final whistle. Matt, is the AVB honeymoon just about over? And can you please explain the rationale with having four goalkeepers at the club?
I think the honeymoon was over the day he was appointed, to be absolutely honest. I may well be proved wrong, but I thought Tottenham were mad to appoint him, and more to the point, he was mad to take the job, given his existing profile in England and the fact that he was replacing a hugely popular manager in Harry Redknapp. Since then, Tottenham have sold their best player, not really replaced him. They've signed some good players, but not of the calibre or type of Modric. And he's got a struggle on his hands. What he has to do is try, and it's difficult for him, given his personality, to stay pretty calm, not fall out of his players, and not try to be too revolutionary too quickly. As for the goalkeepers, yeah, Friedel kept them in the game on Saturday, so why they need to sign Loris, I'm not sure. It's a strange one. I guess Loris is going to have to play, given the money they've paid for him. Which is a bit of a waste to have Fried on the bench, and what Gomez is still doing there, Lord knows.
Well, if I'm Fried, I'm walking into the chairman's office today and putting my money where my mouth is and cancelling the contract and saying, like, look, you know, I want to play.
He'll probably go to QPR.
There you go. It's nice one. Manchester City love making life difficult for themselves. They cruise to a 1-0 lead over QPR and then complicate matters by letting the opposition back into the game before rolling to a 3-1 win. Cass, would you feel better about City's chances of retaining the title if they seemed a little bit more in control?
Oh, it's been really weird watching them this year. Anfield the week before, you know, the way they played and changed their system, and that Silva on the bench was that been their creator, and then watching them again against QPR, they just, like you said, they don't look in control, and you're thinking, expecting more for a team that's won the title and just to, you know, move up the level and have the confidence. And apart from a late Tevez goal, you know, QPR were very close again, like last year, of getting something from Manchester, and I was surprised because they haven't been convincing in the opening three games for me.
We've talked about him before, but seeing his goal against Villa makes me want to talk about him again. Hatem Ben Arfa. Roy, what's different about him, and how high can he go?
He can go as high as his personality lets him. I think the doubts about Ben Arfa have never been his talent. They've always been about his temperament. He seems to have got that in check at Newcastle, and hopefully it'll hold. And if it does, then he can, yeah, I mean, he is one of the most dangerous players in the Premier League. he's one of those winners who, when he gets the ball, you just feel, not that something's going to happen, but that there's something that you sort of get a little tingle of anticipation that he's going to do something. He's a bit, in that sense, he's a bit like Aaron Lennon, who's got the same effect but doesn't have the end product. Ben Arthur does. Yeah, and he's a cracking player. He's one of Newcastle's main sort of threats in a very sort of attacking side. And yeah, he can be a top-class footballer if his temperament allows him to be.
He smacked the cover off the ball on Sunday.
Gab, got one for you. Cristiano Ronaldo scored twice at the weekend but did not celebrate his goals because apparently he's terribly sad. What's wrong, Gab?
I don't know, but he told us that it had nothing to do with Andres Iniesta winning the UEFA Best Player of the Year award, which I wrote a column about that very subject in the game, coincidentally. All sorts of rumors going around, some stations reporting that he wants to leave. Others, like our own Ollie Kay on Twitter, saying that he's simply being a drama queen. What I find fascinating is how will the manager handle this? Because, of course, Jose Mourinho and Cristiano Ronaldo happen to have the very same agent, super agent Jorge Mendes. So I think Mr. Mendes is going to be a little bit busy. Now, that's it for this week. It's been fun, hasn't it? Come find us on Twitter to share your thoughts or email gamepodcast@thetimes.co.uk. You can go to thetimes.co.uk. You'll find your news, your gossip, your analysis. You'll find my excellent column on Mondays. You'll find blogs throughout the week. Hughesy, you got a blog too, right?
Yeah, Wednesday lunchtime.
There you go. Every other Wednesday. That's your lunchtime sorted. Till next week, thank you to everyone, and bye-bye.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility, there's more to iPhone.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.